Jim, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm good. Thank you.
Good.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm delighted to talk to you. Gosh, I've been reading all kinds of things about you over the past week, and you're an amazing man.
Oh, thank you.
You got a lot going on, don't you?
Yeah, quite a lot going on this year, I must say, yeah.
Jim, you know what I think was one of the most interesting things to me about you was that you're a multi-instrumentalist musician. Tell me a little bit about that growing up, because number one, to be a drummer, you probably had a mom or parents that were pretty understanding about you practicing that at home. But tell me about your keyboard playing and guitar and all that when you were young.
Well, I think I took that up as soon as I started to have songwriting ideas. And it was Keith Ralph from the Arbors that showed me a lot of the chords and things on the guitar. And then I just taught myself very simple piano and keyboard. I can't really play like a solo things. I can just vamp and play chord progression. But I'm quite keen on doing chord progressions for songs and things. It's very fascinating to me.
And you've got a great voice on top of it. So you're just really gifted with everything that you could do to be able to create what you're creating today still.
Well, yeah, I like to sing. I mean, my voice not a real sort of bluesy, you know, strong voice, but I enjoy singing, and I've always enjoyed that since I was in the school choir.
So that goes way back, huh?
Yeah, the same with the drumming, because I was in the boys' brigade when I was in my teens, and I used to play them like the marching drum.
Oh, my gosh. How did you start creating your rock and roll drum style? I read a little bit about this, and I found it interesting who you like to listen to.
Well, I was always influenced by jazz. I always liked, I suppose, the obvious Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich and Joe Morello I used to like, because I liked the Dave Brubeck Quartet. And so all that sort of jazz I was fascinated with. And then early rock and roll, DJ Fontana and some of the rock and roll drummers. And then blues, of course, the blues drummers. But I think the thing was we used to experiment a lot with the music when we were covering the blues song. I made up a few sort of rhythmical things, changes of tempo and all that stuff. But we were all in the same mind. We all were trying to make the music original.
I've always thought of the Yardbirds as, I don't think what you played was easy. You know, I don't think of you as a garage band. I think that Yardbird stuff to me is always, I just am kind of bowled over by it and always have been blown away by it. But you have to find that meat of the group, right? And you do have to be of like mind and want to be able to experiment like that. And the reason why I'm asking you like this is I just feel like you were at the forefront of a lot of the great music, at least for my time, because I'm a late 60s, early 70s, and that's what my school was all throughout the 70s. And when I look at the Yardbirds, I think of you right there on the forefront of this sound. How does that happen?
Time, you know, the timing. There were a lot of bands similar. You know, the Stones we used to see, used to go and see them before we really got going. And, you know, there were the Who, the Kinks, the Animals, Pretty Things. Lots of similar bands playing the same sort of repertoire. And then we wanted to have our own sound. And it was Jeff Beck, really, that made that much easier, because he played a lot of variety of sounds and used all sorts of gadgets and fuzz boxes and pedals. And he was very clever at doing that. And he always enjoyed creating weird and wonderful sounds, as he still does.
Yes. He's one of my favorites to see live. I really do enjoy it, because you're right. One of the things I love so much is that you are, too. I mean, I want to come a little bit full circle now to the fact that you're still out touring with the Yardbirds, and you're the first person, really, now that's been in every incarnation of the Yardbirds over all these years.
That's funny. I don't know how that happens, just sort of acted. I just managed to keep going, and I still enjoy it for whatever reason. I like to come to the States. As long as there's not too many gigs in a tour, I get plenty of time off. I've got a good band, you know, people I like to play with. They're good musicians. And
that sounds like that would have to be key, is that you found the right people to play with. Where did you find the people that we're going to be seeing with you on June 19th? Who are they?
Well, it just happened in a way. Johnny A, I've known for some years because he was on the same label as us. We did the Birdland album back in 2003, and that was with Steve Vai's label. And he had a couple of albums on that label. That's how we met him. He came and used to jam with us back then when we were in his area, the Boston area. We've sort of kept in touch, and he's a very good player. He gets a very good sound, sort of Jeff Beckish sound. He plays very similar. The other two, Mike Scavone and Kenny Aronson, they were both personal recommendations from people I knew. And it's just a sort of magical thing that worked out with them, that the fact that they were the right people and we had the right chemistry. John Iden, the singer, he was the singer on the Birdland album. And he left for a little while. He tried to go solo and it didn't really work for him. They came back into the band and there we are. They're all American and I'm the only Brit now.
You live in France, don't you?
Yeah, I live in France. So, yeah, I don't know whether I'm even a Brit anymore.
No, I was going to say.
Euro person.
What drew you to France?
Probably, the alternative lifestyle. It was quiet. We live in my wife and I live in a little village down in the south. Quite nice weather, lovely landscape. It's a lovely place for creating music, going out into the wilds or walking in the hills and stuff. That's what we enjoy. It's a bit less frenetic than being in London.
And then when you feel like rocking and rolling, you come to the States, which I love.
I get myself on a tour.
We'll definitely rock and roll you too. I love it. When I think of all these years in between from when you were and I got to tell you a funny story. I wasn't familiar. Do you pronounce it Renaissance or Renaissance?
Renaissance, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Okay. So that I've been in Atlanta for 35 years in rock radio, and I went to a classic rock station, and my boss there loved Annie Haslam, just loved her. And she ended up, he was like, you can't go on vacation. You've got to be here to interview her. And she was like my first interview there. And I really knew nothing about the band. She was so lovely. And I loved listening to kind of prep to talk to her. And I thought, how unusual that you went from the Yardbirds to that kind of just glorious music. Tell me a little bit about that when you're a founder of this, one of the greatest rock bands ever, and then go and do Renaissance.
We were on the road for a long time playing, Yardbird stuff, sort of quite heavy. We were traveling all the time for about 4 or 5 years. Didn't have much time off. We were completely worn out, a little bit fed up with playing that music because it was so full on. And Keith Ralph and I had other ideas and we wanted to do something a bit different. I can think else it was a bit of an accident. We asked people we knew to get together and we sort of jammed with them and played stuff, played some of our ideas. And one of the guys was John Hawkin, who was a rock and roll piano player, played in the Nashville Teens, who could equally play classical stuff. Like during one of the songs, he started to play Beethoven. We said, okay, that sounds great, John. Let's leave that in. That sounds so good. And so that's how we built up that sound, the Renaissance sound, blending songs with classical ideas. And it's great. We still keep in touch. They've just done a live album with an orchestra, and they did one of our songs, he told me, called Island, in the show. So I'm looking forward to hearing that.
How exciting for you. What to you the most has changed in all these years as far as either touring or recording and creating your music? I mean, you've been really through every kind of step of it, of modern music. Tell me what to you is the biggest change.
I guess the biggest change is the way music is sold, the download thing, digital thing. Whereas the solid hard copy records and CDs, that market has really completely changed. I don't know whether it's for the good or not, really.
Do you like to still listen to things on vinyl?
Yeah, I like the vinyl. I've always liked vinyl. As long as you've got the right system, you can play it. I think vinyl's probably better quality in the end than CD, that nice warm sound.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's good to see the vinyl is coming up again.
I love it.
More copies.
Album covers were so precious when you were a lover of music. when you bought an album, there was something about poring over the liner notes or looking at the pictures or the artwork or whatever it was. There was something.
Yeah, I like that too, especially a double fold. You can open it up.
Yes. Yes.
Something to have, wasn't it?
Yes. And that's why I'm happy that my nieces and nephews are getting to experience that now with vinyl coming back. I think it's really
great. Oh, that's good.
It's special. Yeah. I didn't even really like when CD, I you know, certainly the convenience is great, but I love for us that it's becoming a little bit retro. Tell me, okay, I can't talk to you without talking to you about playing with three of the greatest guitarists of all time. Who is the biggest,
yes.
Which one was the biggest pain in the neck?
probably the most talented, who was Jeff. talent comes with other sides to it, doesn't it?
So, yes.
And he was a very, very nervous person, very sort of perfectionist about his sound, very particular, very keyed up guy. You know, sometimes that could be difficult. He'd lose his rag quite often, go off the deep end, and sometimes he never quite knew what was going to happen. And that would be a bit difficult at times. And as soon as we got Jimmy Page in the band, he was different, totally sort of much more relaxed and more sort of business-like about what he did, more of a sort of group person. Jeff was a real indie.
Who do you think contributed the most to that, just the fuzzy guitar sound that I love?
That fuzzy guitar sound, that was all down to Jeff. Yeah, and Jimmy, of course, was great. But a lot of those parts, they were Jeff parts that he was playing, that Jeff made up. You know, for instance, the overrun, the sideways down.
Oh, my gosh.
And so Jeff made that one up, and a lot of other things that go within those sort of classic hits.
Are you still friendly with all those guys?
Yeah, I think Jimmy is the closest at the moment because we just got an old album out from 1968. We called it the Anderson Theatre in New York, which didn't really come out properly. It came out and then got stopped because it was very poorly done, had a sort of overdubbed audience on. It wasn't really well done by the record company. And Jimmy had the old tapes and remixed it. And
oh.
So we all got together, him, me, and Chris Dreyer, who played bass on it. That came out at the end of last year, and that's a very nice, nice reissue called Yardbird 68. You can get it on Amazon, but it came through Jimmy Page's internet site.
Tell me about your solo material. My CD didn't get here quite in time, your latest. So you have something,
okay.
But it's here. I was back and forth with your guy, and he goes, it just arrived there today, so I'm going up to the mailroom when we're done to check it out.
I get from talking to you, you probably like it because it's sort of quite poetic, it's quite gentle. It's more like the Renaissance stuff. It's a keyboard-based piece of work. I recorded it in Toronto. I've done two albums there now. You know, I work with some great people and managed to get everything sounding nice, get my voice sounding good, and there's some good songs. Yeah, I think you'd enjoy it.
What a great thing that you're spending your time doing exactly what you want, when you want, with your music.
Well, yeah, somebody said to me once, oh, I really do envy you. You do all your own recordings, and then you go back to your day job playing with the Yardbirds.
And you're a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. Who inducted you?
The Edge from YouTube.
Yeah, I bet he did a great speech. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to try to find that because I don't think they were, in 92, I don't think they were televising the inductions.
No, it's filmed, though. It's on YouTube.
I'm going to look for it. That's really great.
Yeah, you'll see it on YouTube.
And were you totally honored that it was him?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
What a great band.
And then tell me about what we can expect when we see you at City Winery on June 19th with your terrific band.
Well, it's all the great songs, you know, the hits, some of the old standards that we did, the Smokestack Lightning and Train Kept to Rolling, you know, the old covers we do. It's all very well done. I think the advantage now is that it always sounds so good. The sound system is so much better than what it was back in the 60s. You never knew how it was going to sound.
You probably couldn't hear yourself, right?
Oh, right. Often I couldn't hear what I was playing at all.
Oh, my gosh. That amazes me.
Well, yeah. And it's lovely to be able to hear a good sound from where I am and not be over-dominated by the lead guitar.
Right. Well, I have loved talking to you, Jim. You're such a giving person. Thank you.
Oh, great. Well, it was not very nice. I look forward to meeting you.